You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
We all know how important it is to keep your eye on the money, and not just your own. Stay on top of the latest financial and market news with Yahoo Finance, a podcast that releases new episodes almost every day. You'll hear a brief overview of the biggest news in the financial world, all in 3 minutes or less, right after markets close. Check out Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. What can your data tell you? With Google Cloud Platform, use machine learning at scale to build better products. It predicts so your business can thrive. Click now to learn more about Google Cloud Platform or visit g.co/getcloudai. Again, that's g.co/getcloudai. And now, enjoy the podcast. Hi. I'm Ben Mathis. Welcome to Kick-Ass News. I've had a lot of comedians on the show over the years, and the story of how they got in the business usually starts something like this. I was a class clown in high school, and when I went on to college, I bounced between majors, and then one night, I showed up at an open mic night, and the rest was history. Well, not my guest today. Ali Siddiq began his comedy career in the Texas State Penitentiary System, where he served 6 years of a 15-year sentence for drug trafficking. He began honing his unique style of stand-up by entertaining his fellow prisoners with his compelling stories and his hilarious insights. Once he was released, he figured if he can make hardened criminals laugh, he can probably get a laugh out of just about anyone. And that's when he embarked on his comedy career on the outside. Ali Siddiq has headlined comedy clubs in the U.S. and abroad with a sense of humor that bridges divides and appeals to everyone from teachers to at-risk youths. He's appeared on HBO's Def Comedy Jam, Access TV's Gotham Comedy Live, and was named Comedy Central's number one comic to watch in 2013. Now, some 20 years after he got out of prison, Ali returns to the cell block, performing stand-up and interviewing inmates and administrators at the Bell County Jail in Belton, Texas, for his first one-hour special, Ali Siddiq, It's Bigger Than These Bars. Using his signature storytelling style, Ali recounts hilarious experiences from both incarceration and freedom and conducts conversations with jailers and the jailed about life in the lockup. Encouraging and inspiring his inmate audience, Siddiq turns hard times into hearty laughs with stories about everything from uncomfortable prison nudity to the time he doused himself in baby oil and refused to leave his cell. And today, Ali Siddiq joins me on the podcast to talk about growing up with the queen of whoop-ass for a mom, rough times on the mean streets of Houston, and the incident that finally landed him behind bars. He reveals how he started telling funny stories to his fellow inmates, what kind of material kills in prison, no pun intended, and which is the tougher audience, comedy club goers or criminals. He talks about starting out as a comic on the modern-day equivalent of the Chitlin' Circuit, why his favorite comedians are all old white guys, and why he prefers doing stand-up in his own hometown over going to Hollywood and chasing a sitcom. He discusses what it was like to return to jail for his new special, how he convinced the Bell County Jail to go along with the idea, and some of the surprising changes he saw in both the inmates and their guards. Coming up with comedian Ali Siddiq in just a moment. In his nearly 20 years in comedy, Ali Siddiq has appeared on BET's Comic View, HBO's Def Comedy Jam, and was named Comedy Central's number one comic to watch in 2013. Now he's performing for inmates at the Bell County Jail in Belton, Texas, in a new stand-up special called Ali Siddiq, It's Bigger Than These Bars. It premieres February 23rd on Comedy Central. Ali Siddiq, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Well, welcome. It's not often that I get a fellow Houstonian on the show. This may be a first, in fact.
Man, I'm making history.
You've lived there your whole life?
No.
Or what's the story?
Mostly, mostly Houston. You know, my mom, we grew up, you know, a lot of different places, Chicago, Mississippi, L.A. You know, we have family. I have a lot of family out here. But we settled in Houston. And so I went to middle school and high school there.
Okay. What school do you go to?
I went to Jane Long first, and then I went to Paul Revere.
Speaking of that, I heard that you did a comedy show for teachers in the teacher's lounge in my old school district in Fort Bend County. Yeah, Is that right?
Yeah, I did that. It's called Teacher's Lounge, yes.
You do it in the teacher's lounge or what?
They have Dulles High School, the big auditorium, and they get all the teachers they can fit in there, and we do a show, me and some other comics and a poet. actually, the comic is Marcus D. Wiley. He's a professor at Texas Southern, or he was, and he's a poet, and he was actually in the school district, taught science. And then I represent parents. So it's just, you know, a thing to give teachers a relief and, you know, trying to bond between parents and teachers and coworkers and the custodians, because they all, you know, a part of teaching your children. So you want them to be healthy and laughing and, you know, happy and excited about teaching.
No students allowed in this? Just all teachers, huh?
All teachers and faculty. So no students allowed.
Well, what's a tougher crowd, prisoners or teachers?
Teachers.
Really?
Way more critical.
Really?
Yeah, you didn't pronounce that right. Well, it wasn't supposed to be pronounced right, ma'am.
And you still live and work in Houston, right?
Yes, I do.
You haven't felt the usual pressure to go to New York or L.A. as a comic?
No, that was one of the things that made me stay.
Really?
I was against being a L.A. person or a New York person, because it's like you lose your talent to other cities, and then people start to think that you can't be successful from your own city. So that was the overall thought, where I have to move in order to be successful. And it's what's the saying? A prophet is not honored or welcome in his own home. Which is the most ridiculous saying I've ever heard in my life. Why would you not be honored in your own home? That's where you start. That's where you start to develop that you even deserve to be honored, is in your home. I think people get locked into these sayings and what's supposed to be normal and never break the mold. So I wanted to be that unicorn, that blue moon that people was like, well, nobody ever did it. They were like, wait, there's one guy. There's one guy, and he actually still lives in Houston.
That's cool. Yeah, well, now it's not like it's the 70s where there were no comedy clubs in, like, Minneapolis or Houston and all these flyover states. I think you're right. I think people get too much pressure to go to L.A. or New York, and they go too early when they haven't perfected their craft, and there are plenty of good clubs where they are if they're near any kind of a decent-sized city.
I don't think people weigh it out. I think it's just this rush to be a part of what everybody else, the old cliche. I didn't want to live in my car. I didn't want that. I didn't need that part of the story. And I thought that if anything, I can stay in Houston and develop. So when I get that shot, I'm going to be way more polished than everybody else.
Yeah, that's true. And I read an interview where you talked about some of your comedic inspirations, and it was kind of funny to me because here you are, a black man from Houston, and you listed like the whitest comics I can possibly imagine, like Don Rickles, Carol Burnett, Benny Hill. Like, I don't even know where a young black man in Houston gets exposed to the Benny Hill show. That's the first. I don't even hear white guys refer to Benny Hill as an inspiration.
It came on TV. It's really? Like, you know, you late night, your dad has cable, you know, and this is your first year living with your dad. You 10, and he had cable, man. And he was like 10:30. Benny Hill, come on. I'm like, who is this crazy dude? And he's slapping this little dude on the head and his half-naked women running around. I'm like,
oh, that's why you were watching it. I remember that part.
And then I'm like, this is funny.
Yeah.
And he's not saying nothing a lot of the time.
Yeah, he's like Charlie Chaplin.
And it's hysterical to me. Mm-hmm. And then Hee-Haw is like, was hysterical to me. Yeah. And it's like, it was these things, the Carol Burnett show. I'm a kid. I'm watching. I'm watching her and I'm like, yo, this is this monologue that she does in the front. It's like, that's the part. It wasn't about the sketches. I was like, yo, this is funny. This lady's funny.
Yeah.
And then Phyllis Diller was like my favorite, man.
Oh, it's like, she was funny.
I love Phyllis Diller, man. Yeah. And Joan Rivers. You know, these are the people that you're seeing on TV. So and then you had Don Rickles is like, man, I loved Don Rickles. I don't know why. He was just like this strange dude. I guess it was
he could get away with saying anything. Even today when it got super PC and everyone was very careful, somehow he was the one guy who got a pass, like your crazy grandpa at Thanksgiving dinner.
It's like the most unattractive dude with this wit that his wit made him appealing to people. And it's like the mystique of, what's that porn dude that just looks regular? What's that dude?
Ron Jeremy.
Ron Jeremy made everybody think they could do it.
Yeah.
It's like, he's the Ron Jeremy of comedy. It's like, yo, Don Rickles, women, you put on a tuxedo, you talk crazy as you want to, and you'll be successful. And people loved him. I'm really engulfed in these people's stories. Like, when people ask me why I like certain people, it's not the old cliche type. Like,
Lenny Bruce and Pryor. I mean, which, they're funny as hell, though. I mean, but those are the names you hear a lot. Or Carlin, you know.
But they wasn't always.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like.
Yeah. Well, they built on what came before them, too.
You know, and so.
Just like you do.
If people go back to my old stuff, you know, it's not as polished as now, you know, but people say, oh, Richard was always great. No, he wasn't. He even said that, you know, and those are the parts about him that make me a fan, you know, like Live from Sunset Strip. People don't realize he got booed and not because he was doing bad. He got booed because he left the stage because he felt like he was doing bad.
Huh.
And so the next night he came back feeling different and now what is known Live from Sunset Strip. So people got to understand the art form or why you like an artist. Like Rodney Dangerfield. Hands down, Rodney Dangerfield is one of my favorite comedians. And not because of his stand-up.
Oh, because of his movie? The movies or what?
Not because of his movies.
Why?
Comedy is a very selfish, egotistical game.
Oh, yeah.
Very selfish.
I picked up on that.
And for somebody to have an opportunity and take that opportunity that he has and make a way for other comics.
Mm-hmm.
So you go back to what did Seinfeld and Roseanne and all these people actually get their real start on his show on HBO?
Oh, yeah.
That's what
true. I forgot about
from.
That.
Did he have to make that show?
Yeah.
No, he could have made a show about just him.
Yeah.
But he took that opportunity to say, hey, I'm going to catapult some other people from my shine.
Yeah, and things have kind of come full circle for you because this special that you just taped, you taped it in the Bell County Jail in Texas, and 20 years ago, you served, I think, 5 years on a 15-year prison sentence, and apparently that's where you got your start in stand-up comedy, right?
Yeah, six. But
six,
know,
okay. Who's counting?
Count, you know. Yeah.
How did that start?
It actually started in on Ellis 2. In Huntsville, on closed custody.
Yeah.
That's where I kind of started honing the skills when I was placed as a SSI. SSI is a janitor, basically a janitor. You clean up the block, and they put me on closed custody as basically a punishment. You know, I'm the new SSI, so you get the worst block where people they defecate and throw it on the wall and burn toilet paper. They real wild. They real wild.
Okay.
Throw food at you. You know, it's a wild place because they locked up 23 hours a day and they not getting out of there. They just in this box, no TV, no nothing.
Yeah.
And they
lost hope.
and they wild. And they ain't lost hope. They just ain't got nothing else to do. And they hoping that I come down that run so they can throw something on me. So Martin is the show that's on. This is the show.
Yeah, Martin Lawrence?
Yes. Yeah. And I'm in the day room and I'm watching the show with the utmost intensity. Because I go back to the block, close custody, and I reenact the whole episode of Martin for them. And then Martin goes off. Season ends, goes off. And now I'm stuck with nothing.
Yeah, you got no material now.
Got no material. So can't plagiarize Martin. And so I just started talking about what was going on in the prison in other places, in other parts of the prison.
Okay.
Telling them what they was missing.
Telling stories.
Talking about, and then telling other people's stories and breaking them down. Like, wait a minute. They go back in your story. Like, I have people tell me their story, and I go, wait a minute. So you trying to tell me that you had all them drugs, but they wasn't yours? I'm trying to tell you. I've been sure, like,
like, it's a setup.
So now I'm reenacting they story. And, it just becomes this really conversational type of comedy between me and three rows of people.
Mm-hmm.
And you become connected. And so I do the special in prison. People think that it's geared towards a certain demographics, but it took me 17 years to do anything about prison.
Really? So this was totally different than your usual act, huh?
Yeah. It's like, because my stand-up is basically just my normal conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But in prison, it was like I was a different person. It's like not really a different person. And like people have buttons. And my button is generally based upon me thinking about, would you say that to somebody else?
Mm-hmm.
What made you think you could say that to me? And do you think that I'm some sort of easy type of win, or that you intimidate me or something?
Huh.
Those are the things that go through my head. And then I make my decision on how far I'm going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And in prison, I was like that. It was like,
okay, you didn't back down from conflict.
I was like, because I was a fighter in the streets. That was the difference. I didn't need a gun. I didn't need no weapon. I grew up fighting. Like, if you want to fight, that's nothing. It's like, what? You know, like, what you going to do that hasn't already happened?
Folks, before we go to break, I have a very big announcement. Just a couple of weeks ago, I proposed to the girl of my dreams, who I've been dating for a year and a half now. And when I finally decided to pop the question, I turned to adiamore.com for the perfect engagement ring. I did my homework. I shopped around for a month or two, looking online and in person, and no one else I found could beat adiamore for the best price and the best quality. I got a simply stunning 3-carat oval stone in a beautiful 3-stone trillion setting that literally made my fiance's eyes pop out of her head when she saw it. And adiamore has a huge selection of diamonds to choose from. You can go on their site and try different diamonds with different settings until you come up with the exact ring that you want. All of adiamore's diamonds are GIA certified, and they have a lifetime guarantee against material defects. Adiamore even gives you 30 days to evaluate the deal and make sure that you're 100% satisfied with your purchase. They want you to be happy because they know that once you find a jeweler you can trust, they'll be your jeweler for life, and you'll keep coming back year after year. I even went down and met with Sam, the owner of adiamore, shook his hand, looked him in the eye, and talked to him about the ring for probably about an hour. Sam's a straight shooter, and I have to say, the man knows his diamonds inside and out. It's no surprise, his family's been in the jewelry business for decades. I was so impressed with the company and happy with the engagement ring I bought from adiamore that I told Sam I wanted to share adiamore with my listeners. But look, you don't have to take it from me. Take a look at their reviews on Yelp. And just do yourself a favor. If you're shopping for an engagement ring or a wedding ring or a nice gift, even if you think you're going to buy from another dealer, before you make that big decision, you owe it to yourself to click on adiamore.com/kick, look at their selection and compare. Their quality and their prices speak for themselves, and my fiance couldn't be happier with her gorgeous engagement ring from adiamore. Let them know I sent you. Go to adiamore.com/kick. That's adiamore.com/kick. And now we're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more with Ali Siddiq when we come back in just a minute. If you're an entrepreneur, a small business owner, or even if you have a side gig, let me introduce you to Grasshopper, the entrepreneur's phone system. Grasshopper lets you run your business from your cell phone while keeping your business and personal lives separate. Choose from their huge inventory of local, toll-free, and vanity toll-free numbers. Simply forward your new number to your mobile phone and start taking calls immediately. Whether you're in an office, in your car, or out shopping, Grasshopper's iPhone and Android apps help you stay connected to your customers. Not to mention, you can send and receive calls and texts from your business phone number, set up multiple extensions for everyone on your team, get your voicemails transcribed and emailed to you, work from anywhere with call forwarding to make and receive calls from your computer via the desktop app, and even utilize Wi-Fi calling. Better yet, Grasshopper offers easy and instant setup and 24/7 customer support, all without any long-term contracts. Grasshopper, sign up today. Go to grasshopper.com/kick to get $20 off your first month. That's grasshopper.com/kick. We're also sponsored by SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal or need the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I instantly find seats. In fact, just a couple of weeks ago, I used SeatGeek to buy tickets to see Dimitri Martin over at the Ace Theater. It was sort of a last-minute thing, but even last minute, I was able to go on my SeatGeek app and get an amazing deal on the best seats in the house. That's because it's designed to make your ticket-buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek even grades every ticket based on value to help you get the most bang for your buck. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code KICK today. That's promo code KICK for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. And now, back to the show. In the special, I think you said that your mom took you back to like the school ground or something and made you fight like four or five kids right?
Three dudes, man. My mom was like, yo, man, you was raised, like literally, if you ran in the house, the beating in the house is way worse than the beating in the street. Like, yeah. It's like, do you understand that how long you would be called coward? Like, that would become, when you heard that, you know that they talking to you.
Yeah.
It's like, in my family, girls, babies, old women, it doesn't matter. It's like, you fight or you don't come home. It's like, don't come to this. You can't run here. Like everybody in this house fight.
Yeah,
like,
should be ashamed.
And then you had to go back out there and fight. Like, my mom was rugged, man. And she still say this to this day. Like, you know, if I'm going through something, my mom say, hey, remember, you should always talk to me. I'm a tough old bird. Like, and she said all the time, like, yo, and she be right. She be right when I'm going through something or... You know, prison shapes your mental fortitude when you desire to be different. Like, there's really no hard things out here. There's really no hard things in the world. People make things hard.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't think you have to go to prison to know that, but I think that how many times are people tested or have to prove the things that they profess to be or say or, you know, portray that they are. So I know exactly who I am. I've been in the worst spot, in the most vulnerable position, and stood my ground. And people like, yeah, he, that's who he is.
Yeah.
Versus officer, multiple inmates, gang related, whatever. It's like, yo, man, I got this button in me. Like, yo, man, what do y'all think y'all can do to me that I'm not going to reciprocate? Like, I'm not going to serve back with a cold. Like, are you serious? Somebody hit me in my face from behind when I was 14, when I was selling drugs, and broke 5 bones in my face. Left me on the pavement. My eyeball flipped over, me disoriented. And I ran into him at 18 in broad daylight. And I shot him down in the street.
Really?
And I'm like,
with a gun? Like, shot him?
Yeah. And I'm like,
damn.
Do you think that I'm going to forget or forgive that cowardly act that you did, sir?
I'm guessing that the comedy club owners probably don't try to stiff you.
And
or
they
at least
still
don't get away with
and
it.
And they
then.
Still going to try. You know, but yeah. I don't really, I try to put myself in a position where I don't draw bad energy from people like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's why it's so insulting when somebody try that. You like, come on, man. Yeah. I'm a nice guy.
You don't want to open up that side aisle.
And you like, yo, man, just come on, man. Just yo, man. And then you just look, you like, yo, man, do you really think this is gonna go like you think it's gonna like what are you thinking, man?
Yeah.
Cause whatever you thinking, man, I'm telling you that's not going to happen. And I know you don't believe it. Yeah. I know what the package looks like. And I wouldn't believe me either. But something in my eyes would tell me,
nah,
that's a different type of dog.
What was it like when you got out of prison and you go to audition for these comedy clubs and, you know, they ask you, what other clubs have you worked? You're like, the State Pen.
Audition?
No.
No auditions,
No
man.
Auditions
I
from
did
the get-go.
It, I did it a very untraditional way. It was very untraditional. Like, when people ask, I never did open mics.
Really?
Never.
How did you get gigs like that?
There's a comedy club on Richmond called Just Joking Comedy Cafe.
Yeah. Okay.
They have a Thursday night. They had a Thursday night Apollo night where people get up, sing, do whatever you want to do, whatever your talent. And these were the most horrific, energetic, booing people. Yeah. I'm talking about they booed for no reason. You really would have to do something with gospel music.
Yeah.
And Jesus would have to be there not to get booed. You need a full minister there. They would boo you. Because it's like
you didn't care.
Just imagine.
You could do worse, I'm sure.
You have U of H, young U of H, young Rice, Prairie View, and TSU all in the same building, all young, energetic people. Yeah. With liquor ready to boo.
Yeah.
They're ready. That's all they want to do is boo. And they came there drunk. The club didn't even serve them alcohol. They came there drunk from whatever college released them. They came there drunk. And they just took to me. And so I started hosting the step shows, and I'm meeting everybody through the club.
Mm-hmm.
And Lavelle Crawford was the first person I ever went on the road with, and he met me through this other promoter. So I kind of came up through the Chitlin circuit. You know, people thought it wasn't around anymore. And I'm just doing these holding the wall clubs, and these not even comedy clubs. These are not comedy clubs by any means. These are we frying fish they gonna dance, and right in the middle of them dancing, we're gonna stop the music, and we want you to do by 25, 30 minutes.
That's a tough audience on that.
Are you serious? Every other comic is like, man, it's gonna be bad. I'm like, bring it on. And so now you got other people booking me, and I'm coming to their house, and so I'm traveling all through the South, just
no kidding,
doing whatever I could do, whatever show I can do, and then I get a call to do Comic View. So I do Comic View, and then I'm back to the Chilling Circuit, and I'm thinking, I got on TV, I gotta keep doing that, you know, whatever shows come out, then Comedy Central goes off, then there's nothing. And then I'm not mainstream, as they say. But I think I am mainstream because I'm playing. What is mainstream? In my mind, like, are they saying white? I'm like, I'm playing white rooms. I'm playing all white rooms. Huh. And these are like hillbilly, redneck people.
Yeah, these are not like comedy fans who go to comedy clubs every week, probably. Nah. This is like real America right there.
I'm at the State Fair in Arkansas, and Bubba out there. He's like, who are you? You ain't Clint Black. And I'm like, I know I ain't Clint Black, but I like it.
Clint Black. I ain't Clint Black, but I'm black. Hey, that's something.
So, you know, and I'm like, okay, what I have to do? And then it's, I think people don't understand that 85% of your work come from other comics.
Mm-hmm.
So then I'm venturing out. I'm going to New York and Chicago and just bouncing around, meeting other comics that I met that through just joking. They're like, well, come to my city. And now I'm on another sort of Chitlin circuit. Now I'm on this West Coast, East Coast, Midwest Chitlin circuit doing just, and they don't understand, why he cool with this? Like, I've already been doing this, but I've been doing this in prison too. This is nothing. And so Rob Stapleton, he's a New York comic. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget it. Yeah. I know I was standing, and he called me. And literally, as soon as I answered the phone, he said, hey, get out of those Chitlin Circuit rooms, those dance floors. You're better acting that.
Mm-hmm.
Go to whatever mainstream club. You're going to have to take a pay cut. Because I know you getting this independent. You're going to have to take a pay cut. It's going to be better for you. I was on the road with DL, and I'm bouncing. HBO. So people seeing me different. DL, I'm on HBO. I do the season finale, and then, you know, it goes cold for a minute. You know, Last Comic Standing, they really not checking for me for that. Then the season.
Well, that's how it is. I don't think a lot of comics realize that going in. You may get a stand-up special and think that's going to skyrocket you to a movie deal or something, or a sitcom, and doesn't always work that way. It's, you know, works in little fits.
And that's the thing. I think that's the hardest part of having this special.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the movie guy. Mm-hmm. I'm not the sitcom guy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not, that was never the goal though.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's another thing that I'm beginning to fight. I already fought the fact that you can stay in your city and still get it. Yeah. I already fought the fact that you can come from prison and be in a bad situation and still do it. Now it's this thing up against the industry of you asking me for something that wasn't my desire.
Mm-hmm.
My desire was to become a stand-up. I never said anything past stand-up. I said I wanted to become a stand-up. Like, I'm a stand-up comic.
But that, I see that all the time, though. I always see people who find a comic that they like, and then they want to give them a sitcom deal, and their goal was never to be in a sitcom. You have to be an actor to be able to do that. Yeah, I mean, that's a whole other animal than doing stand-up.
And now
they take
some
big stand-up star in, and it doesn't work.
And now you want to tell me how terrible I am as an actor. I'm not an actor. I never wanted to be. I wanted to be a stand-up. Yeah. And then once again, like back to saying, I'm not, when I say I'm not Kevin Hart, and I'm not DL, and I'm not Steve Harvey, and I'm not Cedric, and I'm not Chappelle. I am me. Mm-hmm. And how many sitcoms you seen Dick Gregory in?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So now you get a special, and now they want to know what's next. It took me 20 years to get this.
Yeah.
So now you want to give me another goal? I need a goal that I wanted. You trying to hand me a goal because now people are judging me up against, you're not a great comic unless you have a sitcom or you in movies.
Right. But I do want to talk some more about the special. Was this the first time that you had done stand up in a correctional facility that you weren't locked up in?
Yes.
Have you done this before?
Okay. No, first time. First time. Very exhilarating.
What were the logistics of it? Like, how do you even approach them about doing something like that? Who do you go to for permission for something like this?
Really, to be the honest story is I tried to get a Texas prison, and it was so many logistics with that, man. We don't do that here, and it's not. And I'm like, well,
we don't do that in Texas.
The Golden State Warriors played a whole game against, you know,
San Quentin, they played a whole basketball game. Yeah.
I'm one person coming in, but this is the most ridiculous thing, and I want people to understand this, that prison officials told me that they did not want me to come to a Texas facility, a prison where I was locked up in and honed my skills, because they did not want me to say anything negative about prison. They didn't want me to put a negative light on prison. Yeah. And my response was this: well, officials, I'm not in your bondage anymore, so I can pretty much say what I want to say, like I said when I was in your bondage.
Yeah.
So I wanted them to understand this. I'm going to say the word prison, and you tell me all the positive words that come to your mind. Prison. Go, officials. I just wanted to know, what were they even saying?
Yeah.
So big up to Bell County Jail for allowing me to come in. And, you know, and these are people who have been to prison, people who were awaiting prison, people who had some very serious cases, people who had some very serious cases. It was a lot of seriousness in this place because people were awaiting trial and already been to trial, and people who have already been sentenced.
Yeah.
So, I went and I actually did what I used to do when I was actually locked up. That was the most amazing part. I know the cast and Comedy Central was seeing the production of it all, but the fact when they was looking for me, I would be on the rec yard sitting down, and I always spent time in the cells and with, you know, dudes, with the guys and with the women and with the officers, you know, because this was a walk in the halls, and I'm in this place because it was amazing to me to be able to do it and be able to leave for three or four days and going in, I'm seeing and I'm reminiscing, and I'm going in behind this, and I'm like, yo, this is deep. I want people to see this for more than the laughs. I want them to see it for the message that I'm trying to put out there, or what the place that I'm doing it at, and the accomplishment of it. Not saying that you're supposed to celebrate somebody committing crime and then having to come up from that. That's what took that's what took me so long to even do anything alone, is because I didn't want to be seen as that, oh, he just went to prison and that they giving it to, like, nah, I had a whole career.
You don't want to be pigeonholed the prison comic.
I had a whole career before this, and when people see my show, that's why I don't do the stories. You know, my thought pattern is a lot deeper, but it comes from a locked up place. And being in that locked up place allows me to always be free. Like, I'm going to make sure that my mind is free. If I even see myself closing off to something, I'm like, explore it. You don't want any chains. You don't want to be a mental prisoner. You don't want to be a physical prisoner. You don't want to be any of that.
Yeah. You said mental prisoner. I remember that came up a lot in the special. In fact, the special is named It's Bigger Than Bars, which I think alludes to this idea of people putting themselves in a mental prison. What is that to you, the mental prison that we put ourselves in?
That's what I saw when I talked to most people that was in physical prison. How did we get here?
Yeah.
It was something in our brain, our thought pattern, when we were free, that got us here.
Yeah.
You know, I was emotionally locked into a lot of pain, so I'm just in this, in being reckless.
Yeah.
So I'm encapsulating my brain in just this misery. Like, you know how
somebody can, in a loop.
Yeah, somebody can say something
to you.
That's
how people keep coming back to prison.
Yeah, right? Somebody can say something to you, and you would take it wrong. Like, you would say something to somebody, and they would take it wrong. You're like, I didn't mean that at all. Like, what are you talking about? Like, no, you implying, like, no, I was not. No, that's what you are used to. That's what you are thinking. Yeah. That's your mind state. Like, my mind was so locked in so much pain. At one point, if somebody said, what's up to me, I would click. Like,
what you mean,
what's up?
Yeah.
And you locked up. So you start to not care. And so you start taking these chances. And so you take that chance, you get popped. Now you have to sit down.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what's the thing that stopped me from taking on all these incarcerated behaviors?
Mm-hmm.
Cops, what? The show Cops.
Really?
I remember watching the show Cops, and they come into this diner. It's this white guy sitting in there, and the cops talking to him. Maybe he had some little situation going on. And then you know how the cops did this, always do the little side talk. And he said, well, I know he's been to jail before.
Yeah.
Because he used the term boss.
Yeah.
And I was like, I remember that for some reason.
Huh.
And that's the word that they use for correction of boss and necessities and all these terms that I never use.
Yeah.
Because I was like, nah.
Yeah.
Y'all not gonna lock me into this. Huh. Y'all not gonna do it. I'm not gonna let y'all lock me up. And I'm locked up already. So it was hard to contain me with, oh, I'll put you in SEG. I'll lock you up. I'm already locked up in here. But when I go to SEG, I guarantee I'm going to have the best time because my mind, I played chess with a person before that I've never seen ever in life. I made a chess board and I made two chess boards, made all the little pieces out of paper, slid it down two cells down to him while we was in close because in SEG and we just calling out the pieces.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen that man, but I entertained myself. But I entertained myself for days with him because we was locked up. It was just us and some other dudes across the cell.
Well, I want to read a quote from the jail administrator, Captain Byron Shelton, who seems to be kind of a more evolved guy as far as law enforcement. He said, quote, not only did the morale of the inmates improve, but the morale of the jailers did too. People matured and were able to open dialogues with the inmates, and it made the staff think outside of the box. Sounds like you did a lot of good there. Did you see some of what he was talking about while you were there?
Man.
He's giving you a lot of credit.
That's my first time hearing that.
Really?
That's pretty touching. I think with the guys seeing me and the females seeing me kind of gave them that, hey, wow, it's one of us out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm telling them, hey, man, don't think it's going to be easy. That was my mindset. I would do any job because I was in there doing any job for free.
Yeah.
Why go back hustling or doing any of that when you end up doing cleaning somebody else's floor, cleaning up blood, being a janitor for 90 people you got to clean up behind, you know?
Yeah.
So let me take this job on, you know, do this job over here, make some money there. Let me go to BF. Let me do all the jobs I can do to string money together so I won't have to go back to hustling.
Yeah.
I'm better than that, and I'm better than putting myself in a position to get caged. It's just a different way of thinking about things, and you try to use all your skills and everything that you learn to not make a mistake or not, you know, put yourself in a position. Nobody goes to the free throw line. No basketball player goes to the free throw line and tries to miss a free throw. You try to hit every one. So that statement, where that's another statement that people locked into, nobody's perfect. Yeah, if you stop trying to be, that's the only reason people are not perfect anymore, because people stop trying to be. They start getting that lackadaisical effort of not trying to be. I tried to be. I didn't go back to prison. I didn't want to be a part of recidivism rate, you know, and that was me getting off and clearing my parole. That was perfect to me. So it's a way of thinking.
Well, before we go, you know, since you're the guy who used to have to clean up in these places, I don't know if you heard this, but apparently Captain Shelton, who's in charge of the Bell County Jail, is really excited about this special because he says viewers will be able to see how clean the jail is. apparently he has his priorities too.
Yeah, he did. And their jail was remarkably clean from the jail that I came from 1301 yeah. Franklin. It was way different.
All right. Well, if viewers take nothing out of this, just remember that the jail looks really spotless. So the special, again, is called Ali Sadiq. It's Bigger Than These Bars, premiering February 23rd at 10 p.m. on Comedy Central. Ali, thanks for talking with me.
Man, thank you for having me.
Thanks again to Ali Sadiq for coming on the podcast. His comedy special, Ali Sadiq, It's Bigger Than These Bars, premieres on Friday, February 23rd at 11 p.m. Eastern on Comedy Central. To learn more, visit cc.com. And if you want to see Ali perform live, check out his upcoming show dates at alisadiq.com. That's S-I-D-D-I-Q. And follow him on Twitter at @Ali_speaks. So folks, I was just telling you about my friends at adiamore.com earlier. They're the jeweler who hooked me up with a beautiful 3-carat engagement ring that my fiance absolutely adores. She literally never takes it off. In fact, I'll post a pic on social media so you can actually see it. I shopped around online and even went into stores, and I could not find better quality at a better price than I did at adiamore.com. All of Adia Moore's diamonds are GIA certified, and they have a lifetime guarantee against material defects. And Adia Moore even gives you 30 days to evaluate the deal and make sure that you're 100% satisfied with your purchase. I've actually met Sam, the owner, and I'm such a big fan that I told Sam I want to plug Adia Moore on the show. If you're shopping for an engagement ring or wedding bands, maybe you're just looking for a nice necklace or a bracelet for a birthday gift, even if you're planning on buying from your uncle's guy downtown or some other site, just do yourself a favor and go to adiamore.com/kick to compare. That's adiamore.com/kick. Again, adiamore.com/kick. They made me happy, they made my fiance very happy, and I think they'll make you happy too. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to Kick-Ass News on iTunes and leave us a review. You can follow us on Facebook or on Twitter @KickassNewsPod. And as always, I welcome your comments, questions, and ideas at comments@kickassnews.com. I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News. Kick-Ass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.